Okay, Brian, prediction time. What do you think we'll see at CES 2026?
Come on now, this is easy. Self-driving pizza delivery drones.
Okay, I absolutely love that. I was going to say AI-powered fashion shows, but either way, we'll be there co-hosting and you should be too.
CES is where the future gets made in real time, where visionaries and bold thinkers reveal breakthroughs that shape our world.
Every moment sparks innovation and action.
Because when the world is watching,
when the stakes are high,
when the opportunities are real,
innovators show up.
Join us by registering at ces.tech.
See you there.
This is CES Tech Talk. I'm James Kotecki, exploring the trends shaping the world's most powerful tech event, CES 2026 in Las Vegas, January 6th through 9th. Today, we spend the entire show talking about the weather. And I don't mean small talk. Weather has massive impact from air travel to consumer behavior. Turns out sunny days don't just put you in a good mood, they make advertisers happy too. Our guest is Rohit Agarwal, CEO of The Weather Company. He's here to share just how good weather prediction really is today, the superpowers that weather intelligence can unlock, and why the sun still shines on human forecasters in the age of AI. And if we're lucky, he'll also give us good news for our weekend picnic. Rohit, welcome to CES Tech Talk.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, James.
Okay, so we all know the weather. We all check the weather all the time, and we all complain about the weather sometimes, and sometimes we complain about predictions of the weather, but give us a sense of baseline here. Just how good is today's technology at predicting the weather?
It's quite remarkable when you think about how we go about helping to deliver that forecast to hundreds of millions of people and thousands of businesses. We're effectively calculating weather for 2.2 billion points on Earth. We're doing that every X number of minutes. And when you think about the range at which we do that, it's between 1 kilometer and 3 kilometer scale. And so when you think about the compute that is required to do that, when you think about the models that are being blended together over 100 in order to be able to produce that, it's a pretty remarkable feat of science.
And is there any rule of thumb that can tell us? I remember speaking to somebody in the broadcast news business years ago, and they were like, you know, my rule of thumb is if the weather guy, you know, says it on TV, it's probably good for like 3 days. And then beyond that, they don't really know as much what they're talking about. But fast forward to today, is there any like rule of thumb for how many days out or just how good forecasts can really be? And is that really even the right way of asking the question?
I mean, it's a forecast, right? Which is ultimately making a prediction based on a set of weights and measures. The closer in that the forecast is being provided, 24 hours out, 72 hours out, of course, the more accurate the forecast is going to be versus going 14, 15 days out, which still has a meaningful amount of accuracy and value to, again, consumers and businesses. What's really interesting, especially in the age of AI, is how you take what has happened in the past, how you look at the conditions that actually manifested what's happened in the past, and how you start to draw inference or conclusions around the patterns of weather and atmosphere conditions that you see today, how that matches with the atmospheric conditions that you saw maybe from yesteryear, and how you start to assess, you know, what that might look like in terms of the weather coming forward.
Yeah, and I absolutely want to talk about how AI is impacting and leveling up what you do, because what you're talking about is something that was, I guess, in the past, presumably, solely the province of human brains, maybe the province of human brains aided by very powerful computers, but now we're adding AI on top of that. But first, before we get into all that, I just want to make sure people understand what The Weather Company does. So can you give us a quick tour of everything that is under The Weather Company's metaphorical umbrella?
Sure. Most people probably don't realize, but we have a pretty wide-spanning business. We break it up into two major parts, a consumer business and an enterprise business. On our consumer side, we manage, run, operate really popular, well-known brands such as the Weather Channel, Weather Underground, and Storm Radar. On our enterprise of our business, we actually have a very large aviation business. We help ensure the safe passage of over 25,000 flights per day, broadly across North America. We actually are responsible for supporting over 650 major media broadcasters in supplying them with weather conditions and graphics that help them run their weather programs each and every day. We also support an emerging government business where weather is important in sort of the management and delivery of meaningful operational and mission software. And then lastly, we actually support over 2,000 enterprises with our data, everything from major automotive manufacturers to agriculture companies and energy. So it's a pretty wide-spanning business, and the problems that we solve are pretty complex.
And it was interesting when you mentioned earlier that even if you're looking many days out, and of course the forecast is less certain at that point, there can still be real value in having a forecast that goes out to that point. I guess it all just kind of depends on the use cases. And I want to talk specifically now about weather's economic impact and the folks who care about that, because I think we might all intuitively realize that weather matters for any number of economic activities. What does the data actually show you? Because you actually have interesting data on this about how weather influences people's behavior and then businesses.
Yeah, there's a wide range of data, both data that we've created and or assessed ourselves, but also independent studies that have shown that weather can have an impact on revenue and efficiency by 10 to 20%. We've seen that we actually wired up people's brains or put special caps on them that actually measured their brain activity around what the relationship was between weather and mood, and how mood and emotion actually has a meaningful impact on purchasing decisions. We've seen that every 1 degree of increase in temperature translates into a percentage point increase in revenue. So we think there's a massive and significant relationship between what is happening with the weather and how the weather is actually impacting a business's ability to plan for their operations and deliver on services for their customers.
So then I guess continuing with the idea of weather that looks like forecast that looks maybe 2 weeks into the future. Okay, you might not know with 100% certainty what's going to happen 2 weeks in the future, but if there looks like there's an increasing chance of sunny day, that's enough time to move like the popsicle supply chain and get things going so that you've got consumers provided with what they might need at that point. That's an obviously really oversimplified example, but it's interesting to me that it's not just, oh, weather is causing, you know, it rained or there was wind and now there's crop damage, but it's actually the moods, the things going on in people's brains that are affected by the weather that are then moving economy.
That's exactly right.
Were you surprised by the findings of the brain study, or did it confirm maybe what you already intuitively thought?
I think that we all probably have intuitively considered and thought about some of these things. I lived in the UK for a really long time, for about 10 years. And, you know, behavior of individuals when it had gone from many, many days of clouds and rain to a sunny day was pretty significant, just both in terms of what people wore, their activity outside, but also their retail activity. And so I think that just from that personal experience, you can see the significant impact weather can have on people and their moods and their behaviors. So I think it was reaffirming to actually take a more scientific approach to assessing how weather affects mood and emotion and how that mood and emotion actually changes buying behavior. I think ultimately, that's a really valuable signal for advertisers as they're thinking about where to place their products, when to advertise particular products to particular sets of users or segments of users in specific markets. And so despite we may know all of these things intuitively or commonsensically, I think seeing the data behind it actually gives us a lot of reassurances to be able to go into the market and communicate this to partners.
Yeah, and this is under the concept of weather intelligence. And the idea that brands and advertisers and marketers can use this to make decisions. Again, I imagine that even it could be like, oh, if you think that there's at least a 30% chance of increasingly sunny conditions in a couple of weeks, now we can start programmatically to run certain ads or test certain ads or create certain messages that will appeal to consumers. I imagine that that weather intelligence can tie in, and we're going to start to bring AI into this conversation a bit more, from an AI or just automation perspective, where it's like you can build in some kind of threshold, right? Like once probabilities hit a certain percent, then you can start to message on certain levels in an automated way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If the probability of something happening is improving or increasing, then your ability to react to that improved probability that you think ties to consumers interacting with your brand appropriately increases, and you want to take advantage of that signal. Our ability to deliver you that insight or that intelligence, and then to help you link your product or service to consumers and their changing behaviors, both on our platform, but also on other platforms, is a significant value add of our service, but also is a significant opportunity for brands and advertisers.
So despite the fact that you wired people's brains up, I'm going to call this a no-brainer. It's obvious, it's an intuitive idea, you've got data to support it. And yet I wonder, how ubiquitous is the use of weather intelligence like yours by brands and marketers? Is there a small subset of really smart people who are really starting to adapt this? Is it becoming increasingly widespread as all brands kind of understand this? Where is the market adoption here?
That's a great question. I think the way that we think this is in two ways. One is we think that, to the point that you made earlier, everyone has some sense of how the weather is probably impacting their business. I mean, can you think of a business that does not have some relationship or impact from the weather? It's pretty ubiquitous. So everyone has some sense of it. I think people's ability to actually use this signal more intentionally towards driving their business is a more emerging phenomenon. I think that advertisers and marketers have always thought about us as a brand safe place to deliver their messages to hundreds of millions of consumers. So I think that has always been a motion that people have been very active with. But I think the idea of using the weather intelligence signal that we provide and using it to inform their own campaigns, both on and off platform, is something that is becoming a more mature opportunity. And there are some brands in the market that are really well ahead of that particular movement. And we're really excited to be partners with them, but we're starting to see others in the market starting to catch up.
And is there something brands need to do before they engage with weather intelligence that helps them be ready to leverage it?
I think that it is always important for brands to think about their products and services and the set of conditions under which they believe their customers are most likely to buy those products and services. A funny example might be, if you're in the business of selling sunscreen, you probably recognize that there's a correlation between there being sun and your user needing the product, right? So if you ultimately know what the relationship is between a certain set of conditions and your consumers buying your product, that ultimately is the underlying data that starts a process and a relationship with us to make sure that the set of conditions can map to the activity and goals that you have for your product.
So what I'm hearing you saying is the fundamentals, right? And that's always the answer, I think, when you talk about new technology, exciting new insights that you can add. It's like, if you don't have the fundamentals, you can put a bunch of that stuff on your company and it won't work as well as those who've got the fundamentals down and then can add this to kind of supercharge what they're doing. It sounds like weather intelligence is kind of an emerging thing. It's increasingly powerful thing for businesses to adapt. Are there other consumer or business experiences that are on the cusp of coming out? What is possible in the near future that might not quite be possible today? Are there previews of new experiences or opportunities or insights that we're going to be able to have in the near future?
Well, I think, you know, again, we've touched upon it today a little bit, but haven't delved into it very deeply yet. I think the use of AI in order to change creative dynamically is a really important complement to how we think about weather intelligence. So an example, if you're an automotive manufacturer and you sell a vehicle that is both safe in severe weather conditions, as well as enjoyable to drive, and now let's say, for example, off-roading during good weather conditions, ultimately, the way in which you promote that particular product or that vehicle to your consumers is going to be dependent upon the weather and or the time of year that your customer or consumer is consuming your message. So during the winter in severe conditions, you might be promoting your particular vehicle with a particular set of tires and a particular set of features that are around safety and security. But during the summer months, you might be promoting that product with the top down and much more fun and exciting experience when, you know, safety and security are not necessarily top of mind, but summer fun is more of the set of conditions that you're trying to invoke with your consumer base. So I think you obviously have a set of weather intelligence attributes that are important. You have a set of consumers and segments that you're trying to attract, but really importantly, you're trying to make sure that the message that you deliver is being dynamically created in such a way that it appeals to the user in the right place at the right time.
One thing I really do want to ask you about when it comes to AI is the continuing role of humans in the process. I understand that you employ over 100 meteorologists. And so when we're talking about AI for both prediction and getting better weather predictions, and then how that trickles down into changing messaging and business insights and how that ultimately reaches the consumer, we can imagine a fully automated process there. But obviously, it sounds like humans still need to be involved. So tell me about your philosophy on why humans are there and how humans continue to add value.
Yeah, our general philosophy as a company, I would say my own as a leader and individual, is it's really human over the loop. You know, we like to call ourselves an OG AI company. We've been using AI for a very long time in order to produce this world-class, ubiquitous forecast. It is the forecasting business requires really heavy compute, and it requires really sophisticated algorithms performing that compute. And so we've been using AI for a long time, but it's humans that have developed the algorithms. It is humans that are creating the weights and measures by which our algorithms are running and identifying which of the models to weight in what way in order to deliver this 4 times more accurate forecast than the next closest competitor. It's humans that have to effectively do all the nitty-gritty work to check on what are the flaws or errors in the images that are being computed in order to help generate some of the data that then feeds our forecasts. And so ultimately, we think that you have to have really knowledgeable, expert humans who've been doing a set of activities for a really long time that are informing AI how to think about what is the right set of conditions to process in order to deliver these incredible results. So we're lucky that we have some of the world's best Mets, and you know, our goal is to continue to employ the best Mets in the world in order to deliver the best weather intelligence and capability to the world.
I mean, it seems like business as a whole is going through all these kind of gyrations and backflips and ups and downs on, are we going to automate away everyone's job? Do we still totally need humans in the mix? Like, what's the role of humans? And I think that's because a lot of businesses are grappling with AI, or at least a certain iteration of AI. You know, for the first time, it's still relatively novel for a lot of folks. Maybe just a couple of years, it's been on their radar. You're talking about yourselves as an OG AI company, obviously still a prominent role for humans in the mix there. Do you feel like you've got lessons to offer other companies beyond weather, beyond your industry, in terms of how to make sure humans are used to their highest value and still feel valued despite the fact that you're going to keep going forward with new technology?
Yes, I think that because we've been using different versions of AI for a long time, you know, our formula is that humans plus AI equals superhumans. And I think we all can strive to make ourselves better, make ourselves more efficient and effective. And we have a long history of having done that. And so that model works for us, and we think it'll continue to work for us and with us. And we hope that that's a lesson for others to learn from.
And I guess in general, it's like if everybody has access to AI, then yeah, you can compete on the technology, but then what's the magic edge? It's the humans, right? It's those humans for maybe even if it's just those edge cases for a situation like what you're talking about with the amount of weather predicting that you need to do. Edge cases probably come up all the time, I assume. Like, you still want people looking at that.
Yeah, those edge cases are very valuable. Those edge cases can be very lucrative. Solving those edge cases can be very critical and important. And in the business that we're in, solving those edge cases can mean the protection of countless lives. It can mean the protection of countless property. It can mean the protection of countless supplies.
So a lot of this comes together in what you call, I believe, decision forecasting. Is that the right way to think about how all the different data points and analytics and AI and humans come together? Is that ultimately, at the end of the day, what you're trying to deliver to folks, forecasts that help make decisions?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the way I would frame it is we are ultimately wanting to move from a weather forecasting company to a decision or decision science company where weather is a key ingredient in many of the decisions that people need to make. Sometimes those decisions are being made by consumers. It can be something as pithy and simple as, when should I walk my dog? When are the ideal conditions for me to want to take a run going to occur in the next 24 hours or in the next week? When is the best time for me to take a particular holiday to a particular part of the world? Again, based on certain conditions. What is the appropriate time for me to go camping, or where is the best place for me to go camping relative to where there will be a low mosquito count, for example? So all of those myriad of individual consumer decisions that are being taken every day by the proverbial soccer mom or by the windsurfer or by the camper or et cetera, to what probably seem like much more significant decisions that are being taken by businesses. Where should I route my plane? How can I ensure that I'm the most efficient in getting from point A to point B when there's a massive storm in our way, if you're a pilot, to we are managing autonomous vehicles. How do we ensure that certain weather conditions do not impact our ability to deliver the passenger from point A to point B in a safe manner, to helping different significant institutions complete pretty meaningful operations in a timely, efficient, and safe manner. Our opportunity and our objective is, how do we take what we know about weather and weather insights? How do we deliver that to customers of ours in all of these various use cases and allow them to make the kinds of decisions they need to make for both economic and safety decisions?
I love that answer, and I want to tie it into CES 2026. CES 2026 is where a lot of different ideas and industries and technologies come together. It seems like one place of potential overlap for you and others at CES 2026 is in personal health, right? So if I am tracking my personal health, maybe that means there's certain times of the day that I want to go out and do something. And that's also tied into what the weather might be. That's just one example that I came up with off the top of my head. But it seems like this integration of weather decision intelligence into other factors, other technologies that will be at CES 2026 is a really exciting future.
Yeah, I think that there's a significant and meaningful relationship between weather and health. And so as you highlight, the conditions outside might be sunny. And so therefore, one might believe that the conditions are ideal for a run or a walk, but interestingly, perhaps allergens are high, or perhaps the air quality is low, right? Or perhaps the wind is operating at such a level in a particular direction that ultimately that's meaningful knowledge to have, because the particulate matter in the air is going to create challenges for you as an individual, right? Those are like the places and the opportunities that we are, you know, starting to be in a much better position as a society to be able to deliver to consumers, which is that the set of attributes that actually impact your ability to live the life you want in the comfort that you want are more available than they ever have been. And our ability to mash up what we do with the special capabilities that others provide and bringing that all together to the individual, again, allows them to make better decisions.
You could team up with the home entertainment folks, the screen folks too, and be like, tonight's going to be a nice rainy night. It's the perfect night for a cozy movie night with your
family. And here's your movie recommendation.
Exactly. So there's all these different synergies. What are you specifically planning for CES 2026? I know you're excited about it.
I'm always excited about coming to CES and checking out what's new and interesting in a variety of industries. I think what it spurs is a lot of creativity and out-of-the-box thinking. And for me, ultimately, one of my favorite things to do is to take different services and different capabilities from different markets and different companies and imagining how you can mash that all up into some new service that solves a problem in some new way. And so what I get really excited about when I come to CES is observing and absorbing all of the new ideas and how people have put those new ideas into practice, and then thinking about, okay, how can we take what we do? How can we combine it with what others have done in order to bring new solutions to the market for our customers, and in some instances for our customers' customers? And that gets me really excited each and every year.
I love it. I want to end with a personal question on creativity, because I read in your bio that you like painting, cooking, soccer, tennis, and your bio specifically says this: your creative endeavors make you a better leader. Why do you believe that?
Ultimately, leading is about inspiring people to pursue what often feels hard and impossible. And I think at the essence of building solutions for your customers is thinking creatively about the problems they have and being even more creative in how you think about the solutions that will deliver the solve. I'm passionate about makers. And so being a maker and making things, I think, just puts you into a particular headspace and mindset. And I think it makes it easier to engage with your team and your staff when you have that kind of mindset, and when you encourage them to take that kind of mindset.
Painting, cooking, soccer, tennis, two indoor activities, two outdoor activities, whatever the weather, Rohit Agrawal, you've got it covered. CEO of The Weather Company, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, James. Thanks for having us.
And that's our show for now, but there's always more tech to talk about. Be sure to follow, subscribe, like, comment, and whatever else you need to do to keep those algorithms happy. You can get even more CES and prepare for Vegas at ces.tech. That's ces.tech. Our show is produced by Nicole Vidovich with Paige Morris and Doug Weinbaum, recorded by Andrew Lin and edited by Third Spoon. I'm James Kotecki, talking tech on CES Tech Talk.